I stood in the center of the ballroom, my white gown shimmering under the chandeliers, feeling like I'd stepped into a fairy tale. My heart raced as I gripped Tom's hand, his charming smile anchoring me. The band struck up our song, At Last, by Etta James, and we swayed into our first dance as husband and wife. The guests, all 150 of them, clapped and cheered, their faces glowing with wine and joy. Every detail of this day, the peonies in my bouquet, the golden hour photos, the five-tiered vanilla bean cake had been my obsession for a year. I'd spent $80,000, maxed out 2 credit cards, and poured my soul into making this moment perfect. I was 32, from Chicago, and this was supposed to be my forever. Then the door crashed open. A woman stormed in, her stilettos clicking like gunshots on the hardwood. She was maybe 28, with wild auburn hair and eyes that burned with purpose. The band faltered, and I froze, my hand slipping from Tom's. She grabbed a flute of champagne from a passing waiter, downed it, and hurled the glass to the floor. It shattered, and the crowd gasped. "Who the hell is that?" I whispered to Tom, my voice tight. His face drained of color. Audrey, I don't know her," he stammered, but his eyes betrayed him, darting to her like a cornered animal. "Bullshit!" the woman roared, weaving through the tables, knocking over a tray of drinks. The clatter silenced the room. She reached the dance floor, and before I could react, she lunged at me, her heel catching the hem of my dress. I stumbled, my ankle twisting, and Tom caught me just before I hit the floor. "Get out! This is my wedding!" "Your wedding? Honey, you're just the latest mark." She turned to the crowd, arms wide like a ringmaster. "This man's a fraud! Tom Hargrove, or whatever he's calling himself now, is a con artist. I'm Leela, his wife." The room spun. My bridesmaids, Jess and Maria, rushed to my side, their faces pale.
"Audrey, what's she talking about?"
Jess whispered, clutching my arm.
I don't know,
I said, my voice breaking. I looked at Tom, searching for the man I'd fallen for, the one who'd proposed on a rooftop under a meteor shower, who'd promised me a life of love and adventure. His jaw was tight, his eyes avoiding mine.
"Tell her, Tom,"
Leela taunted, stepping closer.
"Tell her how you married me in Vegas 3 years ago. How you drained my savings and disappeared. Tell her about the others."
"Others? What's she talking about?" He opened his mouth, but no words came.
"Oh, sweetheart. You're number 4. Or is it 5? He's got a type. Smart, trusting, with just enough money to bleed dry."
The guests murmured, some pulling out phones, others whispering. My mother stood frozen by the cake, her hand over her mouth. I felt like I was drowning.
"Tom, say something,"
I pleaded. I can explain, he started, but Leela cut him off.
"Explain this!"
She yanked her phone from her purse and thrust it toward me. On the screen was a marriage certificate, hers and Tom's, dated 2022. Below it, a string of texts from other women, all claiming to be his wives, all scammed out of thousands. My knees buckled. Jess caught me, her voice fierce.
"Audrey, you don't have to listen to this. Let's get you out of here." "No, you're telling me he's done this before? To you? To others?"
She nodded, her eyes softening just a fraction. "I found out last year, tracked him down. When I heard he was marrying again, I couldn't let him ruin another life." I looked at Tom.
"Is it true?"
I asked. He ran a hand through his hair, his charm crumbling. Audrey, I love you. It's not what you think. Shut up! I snapped. The room was a blur of faces, but Leela's stood out, her anger mirroring mine. Leela, I said, stepping toward her, what do you want to do about this? She raised an eyebrow, a smirk curling her lips. I want him to pay. You in? I glanced at Tom, his eyes pleading, but all I saw was a liar. Hell yes, I said. Leela and I slipped away from the reception, leaving Tom to squirm under the guest's stairs. In the hotel bar, over vodka martinis, she laid out the truth. Tom had married her in Vegas in 2022, charmed her with promises of a shared future, and then vanished with $60,000 of her savings. She'd tracked down two other women he'd conned, both in their 30s, both trusting, like me. Cops won't touch him. He's too slick. We need to hit him where it hurts. His ego. His control. I leaned closer, my heart pounding. What's the plan? She grinned, her eyes glinting with mischief. We invite him to a game that he thinks he can win. Then we turn the tables. The next evening, we texted Tom from my phone, asking him to meet me at my apartment to talk things out. I knew he'd come. His arrogance wouldn't let him walk away. Leela and I spent the day transforming my place into a stage. We dimmed the lights, lit candles, and set up hidden cameras we'd borrowed from a friend who shot indie films. We were ready to play. Tom arrived at 9 p.m., his suit crisp, his smile smug. Audrey, I knew you'd come around. I can explain everything. Sit, I said, pointing to the leather couch. My voice was calm, but my pulse raced. Leela emerged from the kitchen, two glasses of wine in hand. Tom, you didn't think I'd miss this, did you? His eyes widened, but he recovered quickly, leaning back with a grin. Two beautiful women? Maybe this night's looking up. Oh, it is. But it's our game now. Leela sat beside him. You like games, don't you, Tom? Marrying women, taking their money, leaving them broken? That's your kind of fun. Come on, ladies, let's not get dramatic. Dramatic? You conned me out of $80,000. You conned Leela out of her savings. And the others. How many, Tom? Five? Six? He shifted, his confidence faltering. You don't understand. Shut up. We're going to play a little game called Truth. For every lie you tell, we make this uncomfortable. I grabbed handcuffs from the coffee table. A prop we'd planned. Hands behind your back, I said. He hesitated, but Leela's stare pinned him. He complied, and I locked his wrists, tight enough to make him wince. The cameras caught every movement, streaming to a private server Leela had set up. First question, I said, standing in front of him, my voice sharp. How many women have you married? Just you and Leela, I swear. Leela laughed, a low, dangerous sound. She grabbed a bottle of whiskey from the table and poured a shot, holding it to his lips. Drink, she said. He did, coughing as it burned. Wrong answer. We know of at least three others. Try again. His eyes darted between us. Okay. Five. That's it. Names. Now. He rattled off three names. Claire, Megan, Sarah. His voice shaking. Leela pulled out her phone, showing texts from two of them, confirming his scams. You're leaving someone out, she said, her tone icy. Focus, Tom. I said, snapping my fingers. Who else?
I don't know what you want. This is crazy.
Crazy. You think leaving women broke and broke in isn't crazy? Let's up the stakes.
She nodded me, and I grabbed my phone, pulling up the website we'd built. A digital expose of Tom's cons, ready to go live with one tap. Photos, documents, testimonies from his victims, all there.
Last chance, I said, holding the phone up. Tell us everything, or this goes public.
He squirmed, sweat beating on his forehead. Okay, six. There was one more, Ellen, in Miami. I took $20,000. That's all, I swear.
Better.
She grabbed a marker from the table and wrote liar across his stomach in bold red letters. He flinched, his face red with humiliation.
Now, she said, let's have some real fun.
You like to play the charmer, but how does it feel to be the one played?
You think this scares me?
We're just getting started.
All this while, a laptop was streaming to a private chat with Claire, Megan, and Sarah watching. They had paid to see this, their own revenge from afar.
Beg, I said. Beg for forgiveness from every woman you hurt.
He stammered, his voice breaking. I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry!
Not good enough, Leela said.
Oh, jeez! I'm sorry! Ow!
The next morning, we uploaded the video to the website, edited to keep it legal, but damning. It spread like wildfire. YouTube, X, Instagram, TikTok. By noon, it had 500,000 views. Tom's face, marked with liar, was everywhere. He left Chicago that night, but his reputation was destroyed. The women he'd conned, including me, split the donations from his website. $30,000. Enough to ease the sting of our losses. Leela and I became friends.
I still can't shake that night, even though it's been 3 years. My name's Becca, 29, single mom, night shift nurse at St. Luke's in Asheville. The woods behind my neighborhood were my escape after 12-hour shifts of blood and beeping monitors. I'd hike until my legs burned, chasing the kind of silence you can't find in a duplex with a 6-year-old who still wets the bed when the storms roll in. That particular Friday, I'd clocked out at 11:30, kissed Emma's forehead while she slept, and slipped out the back door with my headlamp and a thermos of coffee gone cold. The trail starts at the old logging road, winds past the rusted out Chevy someone dumped, then disappears into the pines. I knew every route, every dip where the creek cuts under the path. By 2 a.m, I was deeper than I'd ever gone. That's when I smelled the smoke. It wasn't campfire cozy, it was sharp, chemical. Like burning plastic. I clicked off my headlamp and let my eyes adjust. 20 yards ahead, orange light flickered between the trunks. I crept closer, boots silent on the pine needles. Heart already kicking like I'd mainline caffeine. The shanty town sprawled in a clearing no bigger than a tennis court. 8, maybe 10 shelters, corrugated tin, blue tarps. Bedsheets printed with faded Disney princesses. Someone had dragged in milk crates for seats, a busted Weber grill, even a kid's plastic slide half melted on one side. The fire pit was an old Goodyear tire, flames licking it up through the center, throwing sparks that died before they hit the ground. But no people, not a soul.
Hello?
My voice cracked like a teenager's. Nothing answered except the pop of sap in the fire. I stepped into the circle. The heat hit my face, thick with the stink of melting rubber. Inside the nearest hovel, I saw a sleeping bag unzipped, a half-eaten Pop-Tart on a paper plate, and some other stuff.
Anybody here?
I tried again, louder. Wind rattled the tin. Somewhere an owl called, then shut up fast, like it knew better. I should have turned around. Instead, I moved deeper, cataloging details the way I do at work. Vitals, anomalies, anything that doesn't belong. One shelter had a battery lantern still glowing dim. Inside, a spiral notebook opened to a grocery list. Ramen, lighter fluid, and a Polaroid of a brunette in a crop top. Eyes red from the flash. She looked maybe 25, my age when Emma was born. That's when I heard the whimper. Low, animal, coming from the far edge where the trees pressed in. I swung my headlamp back on, beam slicing the dark. A girl stumbled out. She locked eyes with me and tried to scream, but it came out as a rasp.
Hey, it's okay. I'm Becca, I'm a nurse.
I dropped my pack, hands up like she was a spooked horse. She collapsed to her knees. Up close, I saw the bruises blooming across her collarbone, the split in her lip. Track marks, old and new, dotted the crooks of her elbows.
They took the others, said it was time to move inventory.
Inventory?
Girls, from the club on Tunnel Road, we thought we were just crashing here till payday. Stupid, right?
She laughed, a sound like breaking glass. I peeled off my hoodie and wrapped it around her shoulders. She smelled of things I can't even mention here.
Okay, sweetie, what's your name?
Kayla. They'll come back for the fire. Always do.
Headlights flashed through the trees, two beams cutting the dark like knives. Engine growl, low and mean. A pickup, jacked up on oversized tires. Door slammed.
I told you she'd be easy.
That's them.
Kayla grabbed my wrist, nails digging in. I dragged her behind the tire pit, heat searing my calves. We crouched in the shadow of a leaning pine. Two men stepped into the firelight. Camo jackets, beards, one carrying a duffel that clinked like bottles. The tallest, 6'3 easy, kicked the Pop-Tart plate into the flames.
Where the hell is she?
Probably on her knees to some John in the parking lot. The little bitch owes me 200. Kayla's breath hitched. I pressed a hand over her mouth, felt her tears on my palm. The third guy unzipped the duffel and pulled out zip ties and a roll of duct tape.
Boss says no more loose ends. We torch it and collect the insurance on the girls that are left.
Insurance. My stomach turned. I thought of Emma, asleep under a frozen blanket, trusting the world to stay gentle. I eased my phone from my pocket. No signal, of course. But the camera worked. I hit record, angling the lens between branches. The tall one bent over the notebook, tore up the grocery list, and stuffed it in his pocket. Kayla shifted. A twig snapped. Two heads swiveled. The tall one smiled, teeth white in the firelight.
Come out, wherever you are.
I shoved Kayla deeper into the brush. Run, I hissed.
Follow the creek downstream. Don't stop till you hit the houses.
What about you?
Don't worry, I'll distract them.
I picked up a rusted crowbar lying beside a crate. Heavy, real. She hesitated, then vanished into the dark. I stepped into the clearing, crowbar behind my back.
Looking for someone?
I called. The tall one's grin widened.
Well, hello, nurse. You lost?
Found your little operation, actually. Girls aren't inventory,
I nodded at the duffel. The tobacco spitter laughed.
City thinks she's a hero.
I swung the crowbar. It caught him across the knee with a wet crunch. He went down screaming. The other one rushed me. I got one good jab into the tall one's ribs before arms like steel cables locked around my waist. The world tilted. My head hit the ground, stars exploding.
Tie her up. We'll take her with the rest.
Duct tape bit into my wrists. I tasted dirt and blood. They dragged me toward the truck. That's when the siren started. Distant, but growing. Red and blue light strobe through the trees. Kayla. She'd made it. The men froze, cursed, scrambled for the cab. The engine roared, tires spinning mud. I rolled free as the truck fishtailed, taillights disappearing down a fire road I hadn't known existed. State troopers swarmed the clearing minutes later. I gave my statement, shaking, teeth chattering, though the night was warm. They found four more girls chained in a cargo van parked a mile away. Alive, dehydrated, but alive. The Polaroid brunette was among them. She hugged me so hard I felt her ribs. Kayla testified. The men got 25 to life. The woods got bulldozed the next spring. The town put up a nature preserve sign like nothing ever happened.
It started the day Mark and Lisa moved in behind us, June 12th, 2023. I remember because it was the same week Sarah finally got her promotion at the hospital, and we were popping cheap champagne on the deck, like idiots who still believed in good luck. The first time I saw him, he was walking that mangy mutt along our back fence at 5:47 a.m. I know the exact time because I was making coffee before my shift at the dealership. This guy, late 50s, maybe 60, had this long white hair that hung like wet strings. The dog looked half dead, some kind of shepherd mix with cloudy eyes. But the man? Jesus Christ, his stare could peel paint. Morning, I tried once, waving from the driveway. He just kept walking. Eyes locked on our bay window where Sarah was still sleeping. The curtains were open. That was day one. By week two, I'd timed him. 5:45 a.m. every goddamn morning. Then again at 6:15 when I got home. Same route, same stare. He'd stop right where our properties met, let the dog piss on my maple tree, and just look. Into our house, into our life. Sarah noticed first, of course. She notices everything. Babe, she said one July afternoon, coming in from tanning, that creep was watching me again, through the gap in the hedges. I swear he was... I laughed it off at first. Ah, but he's just an old perv. Probably hasn't seen a good pair since Clinton was president. But... then came the tennis court day. We were heading out, rackets slung over our shoulders. He appeared out of nowhere, like he'd been waiting behind the azaleas.
Well, hello there, he said, voice like dry leaves. Haven't seen you around much, sweetheart.
Sarah froze. I stepped forward. I'm Tom. This is my wife, Sarah. He ignored me completely.
What's a pretty thing like you doing with a boring old husband, huh?
He reached out like he was going to touch her arm.
Bet you get lonely when he's at work.
What the f*** did you just say? I stepped between them. He finally looked at me, those dead fish eyes narrowing.
Just being a friendly neighbor, trying to break the ice.
What's your dog's name? I asked. Sarah and I had asked him that same question three times before. Three times he'd dodged it. He smiled.
He doesn't have a name. Dogs don't need names where I'm from.
Where the hell was he from? That night I installed the Ring cameras. Four of them. Motion activated, 4K, the works. The whistling started in August. Sarah was at her sister's bachelorette party in Nashville, so I was alone. I'd gone out to the backyard to work out. Helps with the sales manager stress, don't judge me. And it was pouring rain. I was doing push-ups. I spun around. Nothing but rain and darkness. Then it stopped. And started again, closer. I bolted inside, slammed the doors, locked them.
checked every window, every door. Texted Sarah, "Call me, now." She didn't pick up till morning.
"Jesus, Tom, I was drunk. What's wrong?"
He was in our yard. I heard him whistling right outside. Silence. Then, "I'm coming home." The footage from that night showed him, clear as day, 11:47 p.m., standing in our backyard in the pouring rain. No umbrella, just standing there in a yellow raincoat, staring at the workout room door, whistling. The dog wasn't even with him. He stayed for 9 minutes. 9 minutes of just staring. I called the cops, non-emergency line. "Yeah, hi. My neighbor's been harassing us, stalking my wife, trespassing." The officer who came out was maybe 25. Looked like he still lived in his mom's basement. "Sir, he's on your property in the footage?" "Yes." "For 9 minutes?" "Yes." "In the rain?"
"Jesus Christ, yes!"
He sighed. "Look, Mr. Reynolds, without a restraining order, and since he didn't threaten anyone, there's not much we can do. Old guys get weird. Keep documentation." Keep documentation. That's what they give you when they don't give a shit. Sarah stopped tanning in the backyard, started wearing robes even in the house. She'd flinch when the doorbell rang. Then came September 23rd. I was working late, inventory day. Sarah texted me at 7:32 p.m. "He's in the front yard, just standing there, staring at the house." I floored at home, 80 and a 45, blew through two red lights. When I screeched into the driveway, he was gone. But Sarah was on the porch steps, knees to chest, rocking. "He knocked, kept knocking, said he had a package for me from Victoria's Secret. Tom, I haven't ordered anything from there in months." I checked the ring. There he was, 7:12 p.m., holding a pink Victoria's Secret bag, knocking, waiting, knocking again.
"Sarah, I know you're in there, pretty girl. I saw you through the window this morning, that little red nighty. Damn, girl, you looked edible."
I lost it. We ended up selling the house in November. Made 30 grand on it. I used to like my job. I enjoyed waking up in the morning and was always peppy throughout the day. I was so hardworking and so positive that I got promoted twice in my first 3 years. I thought I'd work there for the rest of my life. And then I got into a funk. There was no reason for it. My workload hadn't changed, but I suddenly felt blank. I had trouble concentrating on my computer, and each day felt like the day before. I wasn't happy. At our company Christmas party, my boss handed out a bunch of awards. In the previous parties, I always won something. This year, I didn't. The supervisors could tell that my work ethic was slipping. Afterwards, I was talking with Ellen, our receptionist. She was probably my closest friend at work, so I felt comfortable telling her my problems. I mentioned how every day felt like a slog, and I wasn't happy anymore. She looked around to make sure that no one else was listening. "I need to tell you something. I saw Larry put something in your drink. I think you're being fed something mysterious." Now, my first reaction was anger. I couldn't believe that Ellen was just now telling me this. I asked her how long she'd known. She said that she found out a couple of weeks ago, but she had reasons to believe that this had been going on much longer. I assumed that it must have been half a year. That's how long I'd been feeling off. She was crying now. She said that she should have told me sooner, but she was afraid for her job. Larry, the guy playing with me, was the head of my department. He had the power to fire anyone, and he already disliked Ellen for taking taking too many vacation days. Still, it wasn't an excuse. She could tell that I was angry and promised to do everything she could to help me. My first thought was to go straight to the police and use her as a witness, but that was too much for her. Apparently, she didn't really mean everything. So instead of going to the authorities, Ellen and I sneaked out of the party and went upstairs to Larry's office. Everyone was at the party, so we had the whole floor to ourselves. We searched his office until we found a container of powder in his unlocked desk. It didn't have any labels, but Ellen said that this was what Larry had poured into my coffee. I took it with me. Ellen went back to the party while I went straight to a lab. I had a researcher friend there who could help me figure out what exactly this was. Olive, my friend, was on her shift at the time. She told me to wait in the lobby for 20 minutes until her break time. She didn't know the whole situation, but she could tell that I really needed her knowledge so that I could figure out what to do. I waited in the lobby with the container in my lap. I was still angry, still desperate to find answers. Suddenly, another researcher walked by. She was a young girl with a pleasant expression. But as soon as she saw the container of powder, her expression changed. She walked right toward me. "Ma'am, where did you get that?" I didn't want to tell a complete stranger why I was here, so I politely said that I was waiting for someone else. She made up some excuse about their policy against bringing in outside medication, and so she grabbed the container. She literally tried to pry it out of my hands. I was so shocked by the sudden movement that I almost let her take it. But I clamped down, and we struggled for the container. "Ma'am, please, it's policy." It turned into a scene. The lady was wild, trying to act professional, but getting pretty violent. She kicked my shin, forcing me to let go. And then she held the container in her arms and ran toward the hallway. She stopped in front of a security guard, telling him to escort me out of the building. She said that I was stealing medication. The guy believed her. He started to lead me out when I wriggled out of his grasp and ran down the hall. I needed to find that woman and get back my evidence. It didn't take long. She was hiding in a supply closet, stashing the powder behind a bunch of other supplies. I saw more powder, too. She had a whole stock of matching containers hidden in the back of the closet. "You shouldn't have come here." She pulled a scalpel off the shelf and swung it at me. I jumped back, right into the security guard. He saw the nurse attack me and knew that I wasn't the problem here. He gently pulled the scalpel out of her hands and led her away. She didn't put up a fight, but she did keep on screaming, "I was just trying to help people!" I didn't find out the full story until hours later at the police station. Apparently, this woman wasn't a nurse at all. She had faked her credentials and had been working at the hospital illegally for 3 years. She had worked on thousands of patients and never got caught. She also made a bunch of money selling illegal supplements to businesses that wanted to increase productivity. Her customers used that powder to dose their employees as a way to improve performance and make them more obedient. It worked for 90% of the people who took it, but the other 10% became sluggish and dazed. That's one of the big reasons that the substance was banned in America. Oh, and it also caused severe liver damage. Our boss, Larry, wasn't just feeding strange meds to me. He was doing this to everyone in our department. And I was the only one in that unlucky 10% who felt the negative side effects. The good news is that Larry did this on his own. Our boss had no idea. Larry was fired and arrested, and I got a pretty hefty settlement from the company. Hush money, basically, which is why I'm using fake names in this story. But things are good now. I'm back to my old self. I have my energy back. I love my job again. Actually, I have a new job. I got Larry's position.
My husband Tony and I were spending Saturday night at home. It was just a normal evening. I figured we'd watch some Netflix and eat leftovers. We were sitting and talking in our living room. I don't remember what we were talking about. Halfway through our conversation, Tony's cell phone rang. He answered it. Whoever was on the other line talked to him for a while, and he listened in silence. Then he said one word, "Okay." Without acknowledging me, he put on his shoes and rushed out of the house. I assumed he'd come back and explain what was going on, but he never did. I waited on the couch for about 30 minutes before I tried to call him. He didn't answer. After an hour, I was extremely confused and scared. In all our years of marriage, Tony had never done anything like this before. I eventually called 911 and explained what happened to my husband. The dispatcher listened to my story and told me that there was nothing that she could do. She told me to wait at the house until he returned. If he wasn't back by morning, I should call again. I tried to calm myself down. There needed to be a simple explanation for why Tony would just run off. Still, I couldn't stop myself from worrying. I tried to go to sleep, but I couldn't. In the middle of the night, my phone rang. I quickly grabbed it and saw that it was Tony. I was instantly filled with relief. I answered, but the voice on the other end wasn't Tony's. It was a man's voice, but it sounded fake, like the caller was using some voice modifier.
"Do you want to see your husband again?"
the man asked. "Who is this?" The man didn't answer. Instead, he gave me directions. He said that Tony was in the woods behind our house. He explained that Tony was safe, but that I needed to come find him. He told me exactly where to look. I tried once again to ask him who he was, but the man just said,
"Be quick. You have 20 minutes. And do not get the police involved."
Then he hung up. I rushed out of the house and followed the man's directions through the dark, twisted trees. I wasn't thinking straight, and I didn't even bring my phone with me. I'm always terrible under pressure, and I'd never felt more pressured than during that night. I ran through the darkness, looking around to see if anyone was hiding behind the trees. Everything was extremely quiet. Eventually, I saw a clearing up ahead. This is where the man told me to go. I was about to step into the clearing when my foot sank into the ground. I stepped on a tarp covered in dead grass. I bent down and realized that someone had dug a very deep hole in the ground and covered it up with a tarp. This was obviously a trap. Whoever had drawn me here wanted me to fall into it. I stepped back, careful not to get too close to the hole, and I hid behind a tree. This was the moment I realized that I didn't bring my phone with me. I looked all around, but everything was silent and still. For a long moment, I didn't know what to do. I saw a large rock next to me. I grabbed the rock and threw it. It landed in the center of the tarp and then sank into the hole with a loud thud. Then I screamed out in fake pain. I waited. Slowly, someone stepped out of the darkness. It was Tony. He must have dug the hole. He must have planned this whole thing. But why? It didn't make sense. Tony stood on the edge, looking for me at the bottom of the hole. Obviously, he didn't see anything. I jumped out of my hiding place and shoved him from behind. He gasped in surprise and then fell in. I heard a horrible snap as he landed. I think he broke his leg. Then I stood on the edge and looked down on him. "What are you trying to do?" I asked him. Tony started to cry. We were married for 6 years and I'd never seen him cry before. It was awful. He didn't even wipe his face. He just let the tears fall. He said that it wasn't his idea. Someone was making him do this. And if I didn't let him out, he'd be killed. I was so angry and confused to believe anything that he said. I demanded that he tell me everything, but he just cried harder and begged me to pull him free. He said he would explain everything once we were safe inside the house. Looking back, I know I should have done what he said, but I just couldn't. I lost all my trust in him. I ran back home, leaving him in the hole. Once I ran inside, I called the police. An officer arrived pretty quickly and took back into the forest where Tony was. But when I got there, the hole was empty. Tony was gone. It's been 3 weeks now, and I still don't know what happened to my husband. The police spent days looking around the forest, but aside from the hole, they couldn't find any traces of my husband. I logged on to Tony's computer to see if there was some explanation. I looked through his recent emails, but I couldn't find anything. Then I checked his private bank account and saw that someone had transferred thousands of dollars into his account on the day before he disappeared. That only left more questions. Who had paid him? And worst of all, would this person come back for me? I want to think that Tony's still out there somewhere, lying low until it's safe for him to come back to me. But deep down, I know he's gone forever.